when I start with a nice word on Parshas Vayeschanan, a word from the Toldos, Toldos Yankov Yosef. The Pusik this week talks about the Urei Miklat as Beitza Bamidbar, and right after that the Pusik says, V'zois HaToyrash Som Moish Lefnei B'nai Yisroel. So he asks, what's the connection between the Urei Miklat, where somebody who kills B'shoigig unintentionally has to go to the Urei Miklat, seems like a punishment, and the V'zois HaToyrash Som Moish, what's the connection? So he says, means the Rambam asks, that why do we find that we punish somebody who did something wrong? Somebody killed, even if he killed B'shoigig, but it's possible that he had the tendencies, and it's possible that his teva, his nature, and his mazel brought him to kill. So if that's the case, and that's why he killed, and his friend didn't kill, because he did have a different nature and different makeup, so then why is he punished? He's not at fault. That's a question the Rambam asks. And the Rambam answers in Shmoyne Prukim. He says that the Zohar Kodesh says that before Matan Torah, everyone was tuli b'mazel. Even Yidden, they were tuli b'mazel. There's a mazel that basically rules over a person. It dictates what he does, and he's bound by certain rules of mazel. But once Yidden got the Torah, after Matan Torah, that's when, like we find, Ve'yaitze Oysa Achitzu, that Hashem took Avraham Avini out from under the mazulas. Every Yid has the capability of overcoming his nature and overcoming his mazel. And if he didn't use that opportunity or that capability and didn't use the Torah and the mitzvahs to be stronger than his mazel, and that's what brought him to kill, then that's what he gets punished for. So this is what the Toldos explains. It's Beitza Bamidbar. The Pusik is talking about the Urei Miklat and saying that if somebody kills unintentionally, we punish him for it. Now, why are we punishing him? Maybe he was dictated by mazel, by nature. And the answer is no, because Eis HaTorah Hashem Moshe Lefnei B'nai Yisroel. Moshe Rabbeinu gave us a Torah, and if we would utilize the power of the Torah, the power of the Yiddish Neshama that's bound to Torah Mitzvahs, we'd be able to overcome those tendencies and those things that are natural. That's why we get punished. So on the one hand, this is obviously a big tviya, demands of a person to not blame circumstance, not blame, forget about his upbringing, but his personality, and this is who I am, and this is what I do, and I can't help myself. Obviously, that's not an excuse. It's not a Yiddish excuse. On the other hand, sometimes people get so frustrated when they see someone else doing something wrong, whether it's a child or a spouse, and they give up. And you know, if giving up would mean acceptance, I give up on trying to change someone, so I'll accept them, that would be wonderful. But very often giving up just brings people to hopelessness and discouragement and disappointment and a lot of other unhealthy feelings that aren't helpful in relationships. And if only we would believe more in the people around us and know that people around us also have the Koyach HaTorah and could also overcome things that are naturally difficult for them, if only we would make the right moves and help them do so, I think very many people would have the chizik to try again and do what's right and help better their situations and their relationships. So with that, let me read two questions. Again, when these questions are one after the other and they're closely related, sometimes I'd rather cover two at a time, especially because one is on a topic that I don't want to go into at length. Okay, dear Rabbi Gruen, I have a question that you might not want to address publicly, as I know you don't like to frequent on this topic, but I want to ask and I want to know if you could help me help myself. So I'm just going to change a word or two, which I think won't be too hard to understand. I'm happily married for almost X amount of years, and all is well, Baruch Hashem. Yet, there is one issue, this one specific issue, where me and my husband struggle, and we both know about it. My husband acknowledges fears he has about this topic, and says that over time it will heal. Part of the fears, as I understand, is the inability to please me. I'm ever since waiting, and things have become better, but I still find myself welling in resentment and bitterness often. I want to have solutions for the meantime. What can I communicate to my husband that will not make the fears worse while not being fake or hurting myself? For example, if I say he's doing really well, it's wrong, and I'm suppressing myself by saying it. How can I deal with the resentment? Thank you very much. Okay, relatively simple. One area between husband and wife that is not good. To make believe it is good, I'm fooling myself to say it's not good, my husband will be hurt by it, so what do I do? Okay, let's go on to the next one. Hello. I've just finished listening to your class on Torah Anytime, Parshas Koirach. How do I accept my spouse despite his weaknesses and get what I need too? This is the first time I'm hearing something that so resembles what we go through. I've gone through many cycles of working on myself, working by myself, taking college classes and getting onto track of respecting my husband, and yet I find that I keep on falling off track and falling into resentment. This lady sounds so admirably strong and I feel so small next to her. What I wanted to ask is, I don't know if you answered the second part of the question, how do I get what I need too? I rarely get my emotional needs met, and I feel like I'm running on no fuel. My husband doesn't know how to give me and doesn't understand me or listen to me. He also has some sort of black that I think is connected to his parents' divorce, so that whenever I try explaining something I need from him, he feels like I'm criticizing him. I basically have no option other than to totally accept him, and I feel like I can't get the marriage I so much crave, with a real closeness and deep connection. I go between disconnecting from him because it's so painful to live a superficial relationship, to feeling hopeless and then working on things by myself, but the cycle just keeps repeating because I don't get my needs met. I feel that what makes me fall off track is just being human and getting tired of being the only one working on our marriage. I feel like I'm holding up our marriage and that I never get a break, and whenever I have no strength left and let go, my marriage becomes a complete disaster. But how can I have strength if I'm not getting my basic emotional needs met? How can I get past this vicious cycle? Is there any hope? I'll be so thankful for some insights that can help us. Deep down, I hope so much that we can find a way to help us finally get out of this terrible cycle that is robbing us of success in life as people and work and avodas Hashem, and robbing our family of warmth, love, and stability. Thank you very much. I heard that you wrote a book, and Be'ez Hashem, I plan on getting this book. Thank you. Okay. So, it's relatively similar, these two questions, for those who noticed. You started by saying that you heard a share of mine in Parshas Koyrech. It must have been a year ago, Parshas Koyrech, I would assume. How I accept my spouse despite his weaknesses and get what I need as well. And you write that this woman is so admirably strong and that you feel so small next to her. Now, I didn't look back at the class, but I assume you're right. I assume you heard me read a letter of a woman who is admirably strong. And it's wonderful to notice that and to admire it and to emulate it. Very many times people either see others who are doing the right thing as weak and wimpy, and they don't know to respect a woman who's really doing the right thing in her marriage, for example. That's one mistake. Another mistake is when people see someone else as being so big and I'm so small near her and I can't do what she does, and that basically exempts us of having to learn from other people and emulate them. I think, you know, that's life. When you see someone doing the right thing, even if it's hard and even if it's not something you're looking to do, and you don't want to have to put in all that hard work, but when you hear people do things that are admirable and they do what they could for their relationships or their families, it's something we should learn from. There are many people out there who don't have the best situations, because that's not what Hashem gave them, and they do what they have to do. And because we're pampered in a way that, you know, everything, we like when things are easy, and we like when things are geschmack, and that's what we look for automatically. Sometimes we see people who are dealing with struggle and difficulty, and we admire them, but we don't necessarily want to emulate them or have to copy them. So that's just something, it's important when you see someone who's doing the right thing, to relate to it and say, yeah, I could also. Another thing I just want to mention also, just as an introduction, is that you talk about the cycle that keeps on repeating. Now, I know you're trying to get out of that cycle, and I admire that as well. But something I mention often is that cycles that repeat themselves are very often presented as complaints. I'm doing this again and again and again, and it keeps on happening. And it looks like the complaint is getting bigger and bigger if I keep on doing the same thing and it's not working, or we keep on getting stuck. I understand you, and I feel for you, and I do. When a pattern keeps on repeating itself, it just means that you're doing the wrong thing. Now, we don't yet know what the right thing to do is. Maybe that's okay. Not everyone has to figure out what the right thing is. But instead of expressing a repeating failed cycle as a complaint, it's important to express it as a question. I keep on flipping the switch and the light's not going on. What do I do? As opposed to, I keep on flipping the switch and still not going on. And I must have flipped it 100 times and still not going on. This is crazy. It's not crazy. After flipping it a few times and you see the light's not going on, it's either disconnected or there's a different switch somewhere, or you don't know what you're doing. You know? It's just, so I think it's important for people to realize that whenever anything is happening too often and a pattern is repeating itself, that's when we realize that, okay, like Thomas Edison said, he figured out 1,000 ways not to make a light bulb because it didn't work. I figured out what doesn't work in my marriage. Is there something that could work, or should I just stop trying to do this thing that's very frustrating? Okay. So to address the two questions, I think an important rule, an important idea that I think would help these situations and a lot of them is to avoid extremes and to be reasonable. There's a lot of extremes that people take, whether it's between hopefulness and hopelessness, for example. We're either hopeful for the best, and then we're not happy when we have anything less than the best, or we become totally hopeless because it's anyway not good, and then we just give up. Those are two extremes that people take, and they avoid, you know, and they avoid the middle ground, which is be reasonable, know what to hope for, and know what you could get, and don't be hopeless about it. That's one example. Another example that I'm noticing here between the lines of both of these letters, actually, is between honesty and faking. Right? There's the extreme of being extremely honest, extremely transparent. This is how I feel, and this is what I want, and I'm not going to fake it. I'm not going to tell you I'm happy if I'm not, and I'll be all honest about it. Right? Or that's not going to work. So I'll just fake it. I'll fake it. I'll make believe I'm happy. I'll make believe I'm getting what I want. I'll make believe everything is rosy. Again, these are extremes that are no good. In general, in life, extremes are no good. The Rambam talks about that. And they're not reasonable. It's not reasonable to always be hopeful for the best, which automatically sometimes leads to not being happy with anything less than the best. And it's also not reasonable to think that you could be totally honest and transparent and feel good about the fact that you could share all your feelings, you know, if that's going to work against you. So it's nice to be able to share, but everything has to be done within reason. And this is something that, you know, people often go from one end to the next. Like, they get hopeful all of a sudden because they took a course or they read a book or whatever it is, and they're all pumped and then we had a good week and that's it for the rest of my life. Everything will be rosy. Or that's what I'm hoping for. And then they go to the other end where you know, they just get all upset all over again because it didn't last. Like, what were you thinking? Really? I was talking to a chusin this past week. He's getting married. And Wuchsham, he's happy. He's happy he did a good shidduch. And he's happy with who he's marrying. But there were two or three things that he knows about his kala that he feels bother him, that he's not happy about. And he came to discuss it. How am I going to deal with this? I know that she or the family or whatever it is, they have a certain whatever it is, certain something they do or something that they believe in, something that they behave or something they look or whatever it is, and it gets on my nerves. And how am I going to deal with that? How am I going to deal with that? Now, I don't mean to trivialize. When something's bothering someone, I always say, whatever it is is bothering you is important to you. Whatever it is bothers me is important to me. It doesn't matter. You can't compare the big and the small. But it's just so important to understand that everyone has things that are bothering them. Everyone. There's not a person in the world, I don't think, almost, who has anything in life that's just perfect. There's always the, you know, if I had the ability, the magic button, I'd make it even better. Whether it's my house, or my spouse, or my child, or my whatever it is, I would make it even better. Now, some people who know that they can make things even better, and they're okay with that. If I had the magic button, yeah, I'd make it better. I'd make it even better, yeah. I'd make my suit fit even better and still be roomy and cozy. How? I don't know, a magic button, yeah. There are always things that I would make even better. But if it's not that way, I'll be okay with it. But nobody has, I don't think, in this world, we're not yet taking Ashulam. You know, everyone would rather things be a little better, but it's okay. That's part of life. What happens is people get these false expectations, especially when you're getting married. You did the amazing shleimus of a shidduch, and it's just the best in the world. So I'm assuming everything will be great, and it bothers me that I know something is not really, really, really great. Right, so welcome to the club. Instead of figuring it out after you got married, you figure it out before you got married. This is normal. This is normal. You're marrying someone who is not the exact thing you wanted. When you bought an Eserik, it wasn't the exact thing you wanted. And even if it is, you could still, you know, maybe for a few more dollars make it just a little bigger and a little more nice. You know, it doesn't work like that. That's not what real life is about. And it was funny because the same day that I was talking to this chusin, I was talking to two people before him, and one mentioned something about their child being a little too frum. Just a little too frum, it was like a little overboard. And the other one was coming about the child who's a little less frum than they want. Now again, everybody is entitled to complain and to want to make things better and to be unhappy and to try to, you know, look for etzes that will make their life even better. I think Hashem definitely gives us the right to try to help ourselves in every area. And it's fine. But it just goes to show that there's no perfect. There isn't perfect in this world. So the fact that you know something about your kala that bothers you, okay. You figure it out early enough and other people figure it out later. And that's just what life is about. So getting back to the people over here writing about things that bother them, you know, it's good to be hopeful and to put in work and to try to make things better than they are. But to go from being so hopeful that you want everything to be perfect, which automatically could leave you to such hopelessness or such disappointment, that's something that I think people sometimes definitely need help in understanding how to be within reason. So if it's 10 years or 15 years or whatever it is that you're looking for certain things in life, and you're going from looking for them to be exactly the way you want, or being just depressed and unhappy, it's very important to find the middle. So yeah, it's important to hope and try to make things better, and it's also important to know the limits and how to accept reality. And the same thing is with honesty. It's good to know to be honest with your spouse in a way that's going to help things, instead of just faking it and just accepting when nothing is good. It's also important to know when to fake just a little bit and make someone feel good, because that's what helps people do the right thing. That's what helps people be happy and continue in the right way. And like I said, I think everyone's accepting. Some people are accepting things willingly because they made peace with it. Some people are accepting things unwillingly. But everyone's accepting the fact that not everything is the way they want. So I think the faster that some people will accept the fact that, no, it's not perfect and it might never become perfect, that alone is a big introduction, a big step in the right direction of actually making things better. There's a mistake that people make when they try to be accepting. They verbalize their acceptance. And I heard this from people many times. It's so I don't know if it's downright hurtful or just subconscious and people don't even mean anything bad. You know, when a woman will tell her husband, I'm like, yeah, so I wanted to marry someone that's a learner, and you're not. That's okay. It's okay. I made peace with it. That's not called making peace with it. It's called hurting someone's feelings. Or when you tell your wife, you know, I really wanted somebody who's tall and skinny, but they listen, this is what I got, and it's okay. You know, I accept you. I'm not trying to change you, so don't change me. That's not called accepting. It's called holding on to something that you're still grudging about, and you're making someone feel bad about it because you haven't accepted it. You're holding on to your acceptance because that's your negotiation card. Like, I accepted you even though I'm not happy. You know, so that's something that you should never do. People like to feel validated like a victim with, I have the right to complain because I accepted something which I never accepted, something I can't change anyway. So that's obviously a big problem. So now let's go a little more into how do I get what I want. Now, like I said, I don't know if you get exactly what you do want, but maybe you can get something that you do want. Maybe you can still communicate in a way that will help you make things better. So the first thing not to do, let's start with the don'ts. I've done this many times, and every time it helps people internalize the idea more. Don't complain and express unhappiness. So many times people don't realize that I'm complaining about this for 10 years already, it's not getting better. It's not getting better because you complain. Nobody likes hearing complaints. Complaints are critical, complaints are condescending, complaints make people feel bad. Nobody feels motivated and encouraged because you're complaining about them. Nobody wants to make things better or please you because you're telling them how unhappy you are. It just makes people feel so, you know, so discouraged and so depressed themselves. Like, why would I want to? How do I make things better if all I hear from you is how not good it is? I have people who write to me complaining about their spouses who they think I'm going to help because they're writing to me. And I understand that when you're writing to me to tell me how bad your spouse is, you're only here to complain because that's the part you want me to fix, right? I'm the person trying to help your marriage, and you let me know all the problems. I understand. Logically, it makes sense to just share the bad news, not the good news, right? But what does it say about you? If all you have to say about your spouse is only things that are bad, and you don't know how to write, you know, my spouse is really an excellent person in this area, and if you could help me with that area, it would make things better. If you could only write, again, even if you're just trying to fool me, to make me think that you're really a good person who sees all the good, but just be diplomatic. And that's with someone else, but when you're talking to your spouse, so many people make this mistake, and they don't know how to say what is good. They don't know how to talk about what did improve. They don't know how to emphasize and make a big deal about all the things that they really do admire and respect in a spouse. So if all you're coming with is, well, should I fake it and make believe I'm happy? Or should I tell you I'm not happy? If all you have to say is that you're not happy, then don't say anything. But if you could say about all the things that you're happy about, and without adding the word but, you could add that something else would make you even happier, I think that's fine. Now, you mentioned that whenever you say something, your spouse feels like you're criticizing. Maybe this is coming from some old trauma you said, or some divorce, or whatever it is. Well, you could clarify that you're not criticizing. You know, you want to make sure that nobody has reason to think that you are. I hear this from people all the time. I say it, and he thinks I'm criticizing, so I can't say, why does he think you're criticizing? Maybe you are. No, I'm not criticizing, I'm just saying. You're just saying something critical. If you clarify that you're not criticizing, and you say it clearly, I'm not criticizing you, I don't blame you, I don't think you do anything wrong or mean anything wrong, I would appreciate it if this could be better. So you said it clearly, it gives people less reason to think that you're actually criticizing them. Yeah, you don't want to be... Now, if you clearly didn't criticize it, you made sure it didn't sound like it, and somebody's using it against you to try to make you quiet, oh, so you're being critical of me? You have to be afraid of that. But if somebody's saying it, you have to think that maybe it's true. Now, like I said, if somebody makes sure they're not being critical and somebody's just telling you you're being critical, if you tell your wife, you know, I really appreciate it if you could have supper ready when I come home, and she'll say, stop criticizing me, I don't think you have to take that so seriously. I think that might just be her way of saying, don't tell me what to do. But if somebody's telling you you're criticizing them, it's good to think it. Are you or aren't you? And this is something very, very important. And you could always take it on yourself. There's another thing I mentioned often. It's about me. You know, you're not doing anything wrong. I'm not criticizing you. I think you're a wonderful person. You do everything right. It could be it's my issue that I like when supper's ready when I come in and I can't wait the 10 minutes. Even though you're right, it doesn't really make a difference if you wait 10 minutes. You don't go hungry in 10 minutes. I could handle it. I could eat something before I come home. I still like when I have it, and if you could do it for me, I'll appreciate it. I took it on myself. I'm not telling you it's expected. I'm not telling you it's given. I'm telling you you're wrong. I'm not telling you you don't know what you're doing. I'm saying this is my issue, and if you could please me. So by the time you're clear about what you're communicating, making sure nobody feels hurt by it and nobody feels put down by it, and you're being very clear about what you want, then adrabah, why not say it? That kind of honesty is great. To fake it and make believe you don't care if you're being served right away or in 3 hours and you are hungry and you're getting resentful, then that's not helping anyone. So in the name of helping your marriage, you're faking and you're just hurting yourself. That's not helpful. But another thing that I always like clarifying whenever we talk about being assertive and asking for things to be done, be specific. Now, I know people don't like to hear that. Very many people, it's the exact opposite of what I want. I want my wife to care about me. I don't want to tell her to have the supper on the table. That doesn't mean she cares about me. I want her to care about me. So I'm going to keep on saying, I don't think you care about me. Prove to me that you care about me. How can I prove to you you care about me? Well, if you would ask me to take a walk, I'll know you care about me. So she asks you to take a walk. No, you're only saying that because I told you that example, but really you still don't care about me. Don't go in circles. I know that you want someone to understand you and to give you whatever you want and to do it the way you want, how you want, when you want, where you want, without you having to say it. I know. Everyone wants that. Everyone wants to be surrounded with people who will treat them the way they want without them having to ask for it. But that's not real in life. If you're lucky and you have someone who does that for you, you're great, you're amazing. Hashem was good to you. It doesn't work like that. If you want something and you think that something might make you feel better, ask for it and be happy when you get it. But that's not what I want. That's not what you want, so don't ask for it. This is the part where people get vague and general and unclear, and they talk about things that are not even feasible. I want you to make me feel a certain way. How can I make you feel that way? I don't know, figure it out. I should figure out what you can figure out. Would this make you feel that way? I don't know. But I've been doing that. Well, then it must not be good enough. Don't let people go into it. You want something? Take it on yourself. Don't make people feel bad about it and say what you want and be happy when you get it. Very many people don't do this because that's not what they want and they end up with nothing. And that's why people write these letters of, I want something, but I'm not getting it, so I just give up and I get resentful. So what do I do now? Ask for what you want and be happy with what you get. If it will mean something to you when somebody takes out the garbage, I know you want them to do it on their own because they care about you and love you, and that's how you think people would express their love for you, theoretically, even though that's not what you do for them because you don't take out the garbage for them, etc. But at least say, it would mean so much to me if you do take out the garbage. I really appreciate it. I didn't notice the 3 times that you did it last week. If you talk like that, and you tell someone, I'm not being critical, you don't have to, you're not the garbage man. And if you could do it, it would mean a lot to me. I can't believe he won't do it. I can't believe she won't do it. So there are things that you could ask of people who are not taking initiative and not being helped and not coming forward and not helping the marriage. And if you tell them exactly what you want from them, you say it the right way, they might do it. They might do it. They might go for help. They might get help. They might do things differently. They might come forward with something. And I think this is just so important. It's also just a way of knowing if something's actually happening. In other words, a lot of times people remain vague subconsciously. They want to be able to stay in victim mode. Again, subconsciously, I don't think anyone means this, but if I tell you I want something, a certain feeling, even if you give it to me today, you didn't give it to me tomorrow, so there's no way of knowing if you did or didn't do what I want, and I could always say I didn't get what I need. As opposed to if I tell you I'd like for you to take out the garbage and you take it out every day, I have to acknowledge that something happened over here. If I want you to come home a few minutes early, and I'm not critical about it, but I'm specific about what time I mean, and you know that will really mean a lot to me, not because you have to and you don't love me, you don't care about me, but you come home that time, then we accomplish something. And not everyone wants to admit that we accomplished something. So again, I hope I'm not coming across too critical, but this is definitely something that I think a lot of people should be very clear and specific when they want to communicate what they want, know what it is, be clear even if that's not what you want, and get it and be happy. And then move forward and get something else and keep on moving forward and building your relationship with the small steps. Now, it's important in general, and this is part of what I just meant, to understand yourself, understand your spouse, just be look at the bigger picture. Look at the bigger picture. Are you looking for a certain feeling or waiting for someone to make you feel a certain way, which maybe they're not even capable of? Maybe nobody could do it for you. It's important to realize what are you really asking for? And this is sometimes the mistake of therapy, even personal therapy, where people have a personal issue, they go for therapy, hoping the therapist will help them change how they feel. And the therapist is just trying to help them, give them the skills and the tools to deal with how they feel. And they go away because it didn't work. What didn't work? The skills didn't work? No, I didn't want the skills. I wanted to feel better. Who said you can feel better? Who said your husband can make you feel better? Who said your wife can make you feel better? If there's something specific you want, say what it is. If you're looking for a feeling, you might not be getting that. Now, especially, and this is something I mentioned a few shiurim ago. I heard a lot of feedback about that shiur, actually. Many people who are looking for a certain feeling, aside from the fact that it's not feasible or tangible or relatable, what they don't realize is that a lot of that feeling that they're missing has nothing to do with their spouse. They're not feeling good. If you're unhappy, for whatever reason, you're not happy, and you're looking for your spouse to make you happy, you may get very frustrated. Maybe you can make yourself happy. Maybe you can't make yourself happy. But it might not have to do with someone else. And this is something about, you know, self-care. I heard this once in the Drusha somewhere, and then I saw it lately in a cipher. You know, a person comes home, goes to the cabinet, opens the fridge, and he's like, what am I looking for, right? What's he really looking for? So the Baal Darshan said, you're looking for a blood gemura. Your neshama is looking to learn. You're feeling empty. Go get a gemura and learn something. Don't go to the fridge. It's not going to make you feel good. And I saw it brought down one of the surim that when people have a craving for food, many times it's just the hunger of the neshama that they're trying to... But this is well known when it comes to overeating or any kind of addiction. People are just trying to squash a certain unhappy feeling. And they're looking for something else to fill that void without realizing what the void really is. There are many people who are not busy or fulfilled or happy. And again, I don't mean anything critical of the people who wrote these letters. I don't know who they are. I'm just talking in general. There are people who are waiting for someone else to make them feel good without realizing that maybe you can make yourself feel good. Maybe there are things you can do in your life to feel good. And maybe even if you're not at fault for not feeling good, but if you're dealing with someone who, for whatever reason, is not making you feel good, instead of just wallowing in the resentment and unhappiness, you know, look for more ways to feel good instead of keep on looking in the same place to get that feeling. And that's something that I think, you know, people will benefit from. Make yourself feel good. Make yourself feel good. Do things that make you feel good. Be near people that make you feel good, etc. And like I said before, you have to accept the limitations of people that might not have what it takes, and accepting that they can't get to 100 or 80, but they could get to 60. So you accept the fact that it won't get too high. It helps you be somewhat happy or somewhat pleasable with what you could get, instead of, but I need 100. I'm not getting 100, so this is just not for me. And then I get frustrated because I have to put in all the work to get the little that I'm getting, instead of just accepting what somebody could get. And you mentioned over here about disconnecting. I think actually both of you, both letter writers, mentioned this. Don't disconnect. It's not helpful. Nobody feels good by disconnecting. You know, for a few days you feel empowered. I'm disconnecting. I'm not vulnerable. I don't need my spouse. I don't need my husband. I don't need my wife. I'm good to go, and I'm not going to let myself get pulled in and dragged down. And it comes back, and this is the roller coaster you're describing. Nobody benefits from disconnecting with a spouse. It's an old mistake. And even if it would help you, you're still being selfish because you're disconnecting from someone else. And part of being a good wife or being a good husband is being connected. So just in the name of protecting yourself and not even helping yourself, you're hurting someone else. You know, what's that? It was a self-defense, tit for tat. That's also, you know, not great. I'll add one more point, and that is that people who are in frustrating situations and people who are dealing with things that cost koiches, and then they get resentful and then they get depressed and they get dejected and then they start again, they get encouraged, they could use some kind of chizik, some ongoing chizik, whether it's a mentor or a mechaneches or a kahal teacher or anyone who it is, but only someone who is giving you chizik. Very often you'll be involved in a course or support group or whatever it is, in a healthy support group, not one that's playing victim and having all the members validate each other, what Nebuch cases we are. I've seen many of those. But and if you could be in a place and get ongoing encouragement and motivation, very often that's what does it. If you're not getting that chizik, and whenever you do need it, you go to someone, you get a little more chizik from the Rebbetzin, and then you start all over again, and you get all depressed again, and you come back for more. Be in an ongoing something. Read a book. Do something. Listen to a shiur. Do something that's going to keep you motivated, energized, encouraged, and feel good. And hopefully you'll have what it takes to keep on doing the right thing. So I just want to summarize that, yeah, people sometimes get into situations that cause them to go from one extreme to the other without realizing that these extremes are no good. Not the extremes of being too hopeful or too open or too hopeless or too fake. Those extremes aren't good. With gentle and assertive communication, you could very often make things somewhat better and somewhat better and somewhat better, and still accept the reality of what you could get to and not shut down, and do some introspection and realize what you could do better to help yourself and not disconnect. And with Hashem's help, and we could really get very far. We could believe in the other person, like we started off with. Hashem believes in us. Don't believe that, okay, this is just going on so long. It is what it is. You know, that would be assuming that we're all just limited human beings and we can overcome our difficulties. And as Eden, we believe that we could. And we believe in ourselves, and we believe that we could do things better than we've done in the past. We believe in the other person, and the question is just, how do I get them to do it? And I, yourself, we bring out the best of each other and live together.